You know, it feels like we just woke up, poured our morning coffee, and realized that this whole sci-fi future we've been talking about for years is, well, it's suddenly just our morning news.
Yeah, it really crept up on us, didn't it?
It totally did. Welcome to the Deep Live, everyone. Today we are unpacking a massive drop of news from the June 10th, 2026 edition of the Teching in Morning newsletter.
Right, and there were like six huge tech announcements that all hit at the exact same time. It was a wild morning.
Seriously, but our mission today is to cut through all that noise for you, because there is a core theme here, which is that we are witnessing this historic pivot. AI is, it's no longer just an app on your phone.
No, not at all. It's becoming the actual infrastructure of everything.
Exactly. It's the invisible plumbing. It's forcing these giant corporate rivals to suddenly collaborate, and it's breaking down some really fundamental human barriers. And whether you're trying to stay ahead in your business or you just, want to know what your phone is about to do, we've got the roadmap for you.
And we really have to start with Anthropic, right?
My.
Because they just decided to basically put a lion in a cage.
A very smart lion.
Exactly. So they released Claude Fable 5. And the newsletter calls this the first Mythos class model available to the general public.
Wait, Mythos class? The naming convention alone feels super
Oh,
deliberate.
it's completely deliberate. It tells you everything you need to know about what we're actually dealing with now. Anthropic is splitting their tech into two distinct tiers. So fable, which comes from the Latin for that which is told, that is the caged lion.
Okay, so that's the version that is what? Safe for public use?
Right. Safe for the public, safe for enterprise use. But then there's Mythos 5,
Which is the wild
the
lion.
wild lion,
I get that.
exactly. And Mythos 5 is strictly restricted. Only the U.S. government and critical infrastructure providers get access to it through something called Project Glasswing.
Wow. Project Glasswing.
So why is it locked down so hard? Because Mythos 5 has basically the strongest cybersecurity capabilities on the planet right now. It can autonomously find and exploit vulnerabilities in complex systems. It's incredibly powerful.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. So Anthropic basically took that wild lion and they built this heavy cage of safety guardrails around it. They specifically blocked its ability to do advanced cybersecurity generation and biological weapon synthesis. And that caged version is what we got as Fable 5.
Okay, but even caged, the specs on Fable 5 are absolutely staggering.
Oh, they're nuts.
Like, it has a 200,000 token context window. And just to put that in perspective for you listening, OpenAI's GPT 5.5 is currently sitting at what, 128,000?
Yep, 128K.
Right.
And Google's Gemini 3.5 Pro has a 1 million token window, but.
Right, but Anthropic is claiming that Fable 5's actual reasoning beats both of them, which is huge. But we should probably explain what a context window actually means in the real world, because it's not just like a storage hard drive.
No, think of the context window as the AI's short-term memory during your specific chat. So 200,000 tokens. That basically means you can drop a 500-page financial report in there, or like an entire library of legal precedents.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the model won't forget the tiny details on page two by the time it gets to page 500. It can synthesize a pattern from the very beginning and connect it to something at the very end.
Without dropping the thread at all.
Exactly. And the crazy part is, Anthropic is doing a free trial for subscribers right now until June 22. After that, you have to pay with usage credits.
Which is so smart, right?
Yeah.
Because it creates this massive urgency for everyone to go test it out immediately.
Right. And while we're all testing it, Anthropic gets to stress test their servers and watch for any abuse patterns at a massive scale.
But wait, let's be real about these quote-unquote guardrails for a
Yeah.
second. Haven't we seen people jailbreak these AI models like 100 times already? We've all seen the screenshots of people tricking AI into writing malware by just telling it to act like a grandmother reading a bedtime story.
Oh, yeah, the whole my grandmother used to read me napalm recipes to help me sleep trick.
Right. So if I'm a really determined bad actor, isn't building a stronger cage just kind of security theater? Won't they eventually find a way to pick the lock?
Well, a lot of Anthropic's critics are making that exact same argument. They say, a software cage is still just software, someone will break it.
Exactly.
But the reality of enterprise security isn't really about building an unbreakable system. Perfect security is a total myth.
So what's the point then?
The goal is just to raise the skill floor. You want to make misusing the AI so technically exhausting that the average person just can't do any damage.
Ah, okay. So it's about friction.
Exactly. If a bad actor has to spend 3 weeks coding this incredibly complex bypass, rather than just typing, write me a ransomware script and hitting enter, you buy time.
You buy time for the good guys. The cybersecurity defenders.
Exactly. And honestly, safety is becoming the ultimate competitive differentiator here.
Yeah.
Anthropic has to prove to these massive enterprise clients that they won't, you know, accidentally burn down the internet if they adopt this tech.
Which feeds directly into a much deeper and honestly a much higher stakes fight over what this technology actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Because as these models get smarter, this philosophical debate over what's happening inside the black box is turning into an all-out corporate cold war.
It really is. I mean, Mustafa Suleiman, he's the CEO of Microsoft AI. He just went on the Decoder podcast and launched this very public attack on Anthropic's whole philosophy.
Yeah, he did not hold back.
Not at all. He called their approach really, really dangerous.
Yeah.
You have to remember, Microsoft, with their massive stake in OpenAI, they take a very strict, pragmatic stance on this.
Right. They see it strictly as a tool.
Exactly. Suleiman argues that even speculating about AI consciousness is just a huge philosophical failing. To Microsoft, this is a controllable tool. It serves humanity. And entertaining the idea that a superintelligence might have feelings or, like, subjective experiences, he thinks that's totally irresponsible.
Because the minute you start entertaining that idea, the legal and ethical implications just get incredibly messy.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
But then you look at Anthropic and they outline their contrasting stance in something they call their Claude Constitution. And they argue that acknowledging the possibility of subjective experiences is just basic scientific transparency.
Right, because nobody actually knows how the neural network generates this complex reasoning. It's a black box.
Exactly. So Anthropic feels that since we don't know the exact mechanism, being honest about that uncertainty is the only responsible way to prepare for what's coming.
And honestly, we have to present both sides here because they both have serious merit. They just stem from entirely different risk assessments.
Right.
Microsoft wants to prevent public panic. If people think the AI is alive, they might trust it way too much. Or they might demand the government shut it all down.
And Anthropic wants to make sure we don't blind ourselves to complex ethical realities just because they might be inconvenient for a product launch.
Exactly.
Let's bring this down to earth for you listening, because this isn't just a dorm room philosophy debate. It's practically like comparing a highly advanced tractor to a totally new species of workhorse.
That's a great way to look at it.
Right. How we categorize this entity completely changes the laws, the ethics, and the liability of using it.
Right. Because if you use Microsoft Copilot to write code for your startup and it makes a critical error that crashes your client servers, Microsoft wants to make sure you are the one liable.
Because the AI is just a tractor, you crash the tractor.
Yeah.
User error.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if your workhorse kicks someone, well, the liability shifts. And if AI systems are ever granted some form of legal personhood, and remember, we already grant legal personhood to corporations and even some rivers and animals, it creates a massive regulatory nightmare.
Right, like who owns the copyright to the code? Can you subpoena an AI?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Microsoft wants to definitively shut the door on those legal nightmares by insisting it's just a tool, nothing more.
Well, while Microsoft and Anthropic are waging this whole philosophical war, Apple looked at this arms race and made a very shocking but highly pragmatic choice about how to actually get this tech into your hands.
Yes. WWDC 2026, they announced iOS 27 and a completely rebuilt version of Siri. They're calling it Siri AI.
But the real bombshell wasn't just Siri AI. It was the hidden partner behind it. Apple signed a reported $1 billion deal to have Google Gemini power Siri AI.
Which is just, it shatters 15 years of tech history.
It's
Apple and Google have been the fiercest rivals in mobile. But Apple is essentially admitting here that their own internal Apple Foundation models just couldn't compete with the reasoning power of Gemini or GPT.
They chose integration over ownership, which is a huge swallow of pride.
Totally.
So let me ask you this. Think about our listeners' business. If the richest, most resourceful tech company in the world admits it cannot go it alone in the AI arms race, what does that mean for everyday businesses? Is the era of building it in-house officially dead?
I think the vast majority of companies, yes. That whole not invented here syndrome.
Yeah.
It has to die if they want to survive.
Yeah.
Apple is giving everyone a masterclass in orchestration right now.
Orchestration, I like that.
Yeah. If you can't build the absolute best foundational tech, you don't waste 3 years trying to catch up. You integrate with the best, and you apply your own unique strengths to it.
And for Apple, their strength has always been user experience and distribution.
Exactly. So for a local business or a mid-sized enterprise, the lesson is you don't need to train your own AI model from scratch. You just need to be the absolute best at applying existing models, like Gemini, to your specific customers' problems.
Don't build the engine. Just build the best car around the engine.
Perfectly said. And Apple Intelligence is doing exactly that. They're weaving AI so deeply into the OS, it's summarizing your emails, rewriting texts, doing visual intelligence, with a massive focus on privacy.
Right, because Apple's whole brand is privacy.
Exactly. So their key differentiator here is processing as much as possible on the device itself. Your phone uses a small, local model for basic tasks, so your data never leaves your hand.
But when things get complicated...
Right. When you ask Siri AI a complex multi-turn question that needs heavy logic, it silently pings the Google Gemini Cloud, gets the answer, and routes it right back. And that whole natural conversation feature is rolling out in fall 2026.
It's amazing. And honestly, when you look at the real-world capabilities that Gemini is unlocking right now, it is incredibly easy to see why Apple wanted that specific engine under their hood. Which brings us to our next source from the Tech and Newsletter, Google's announcement of Gemini 3.5 Live Translate.
This is huge. The Babel Fish from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is basically real now.
It's no longer fiction. I mean, we've had translation apps for years, sure, but the experience was always so clunky.
So clunky. You speak into your phone, you hold it out, you wait. The machine speaks in this weird robotic voice, then you wait again.
It totally killed the natural flow of human connection.
Exactly. But Gemini 3.5 Live Translate supports over 70 languages, and it maintains only a 2 to 3 second latency.
With, what, a 95%+ accuracy rate?
Yep, 95% accuracy.
But the magic trick, the part that actually blew my mind, is that it preserves the speaker's original tone, pitch, and pacing. How does it keep my tone without just, like, parroting my exact English words?
It all comes down to something called semantic context buffering.
Okay, what is that?
So 2 to 3 seconds happens to be the natural pause in human conversation anyway. The AI waits just long enough to gather the structure of your sentence. You know, in a language like German, the verb often comes at the very end of the sentence.
Right. So if it translates word for word instantly, the grammar is just complete nonsense?
Exactly. The sentence falls apart. So by buffering for just 2 seconds, it understands the full meaning, translates it accurately, and then, this is the crazy part, it uses a cloned voice print to output the translated speech.
Wow. So it doesn't strip away your emotion.
Exactly. Human communication is, like, mostly nonverbal. That's how you say it.
So imagine you're jumping on a video pitch to Tokyo. You speak in your normal English with your normal enthusiasm, and the client hears your exact voice, your exact inflection, speaking perfect Japanese 2 seconds later. How does that fundamentally change who you can do business with tomorrow?
It completely flattens the global economy overnight. Google is rolling this out immediately to Google Meet for global video calls and to the conversation mode in Google Translate.
It's just wild to think about.
For a small business owner, language is suddenly no longer a barrier to international expansion. You don't need to hire an expensive localized team just to take a first meeting or, you know, negotiate a contract. You can collaborate across borders with zero friction.
It renders the concept of a language barrier obsolete. And speaking of breaking down borders, while Google is seamlessly breaking down human languages, that exact same border-crushing logic is hitting the digital and financial worlds. We are seeing massive established assets being bridged into entirely new ecosystems.
Yes. Circle, which is the company behind the USDC stablecoin, they just launched SirBTC.
And this is what they call wrapped Bitcoin, operating on the Ethereum blockchain, right?
Right. So Bitcoin lives on its own isolated blockchain. It holds immense value, obviously, but the network itself is really rigid. It's designed for simple transactions. It's not built for complex financial engineering.
Okay.
Ethereum, on the other hand, was built for smart contracts. It's automated code that powers decentralized finance, or DeFi.
Okay, so let me try an analogy here to explain wrapped Bitcoin to the listener. Wrapping Bitcoin is basically like taking solid gold bars out of a vault. The gold is super valuable, but it's heavy, and it's hard to move around a casino floor to play the games.
Perfect analogy.
So you exchange those gold bars for casino chips. Now you can walk the floor, you can play all the decentralized finance games on Ethereum, and then eventually you can cash those chips back in for your actual gold.
That is exactly what's happening. And the problem right now is that one single entity holds an 85% monopoly on those casino chips.
Wow, 85%.
Yeah, a token called WBTC controls over $9 billion of wrapped Bitcoin value right now. And Circle is trying to dethrone them by targeting institutional trust.
Okay, hold on. You lost me earlier at playing the decentralized finance games. Because if Ethereum is the casino floor, what exactly are these smart contracts doing with my wrapped Bitcoin casino chips?
Sure. Let's say you own some Bitcoin and you really believe the price will go up over the next 10 years. You do not want to sell it.
Right. I'm holding it.
But you also want to earn interest on that asset right now. In the Ethereum DeFi ecosystem, there are these automated lending platforms. You can take your casino chips, your wrapped Bitcoin, and deposit it into a smart contract that automatically lends it out to other traders.
And that pays me a yield in real time.
Exactly. No bank manager, no approval process. It's just pure code executing a contract.
Okay. But to do that, I have to actually trust that the casino chip I'm holding is genuinely backed by the real gold sitting back in the vault. How does Circle prove that to, say, a massive traditional Wall Street bank who might want to jump in?
They do it through a mechanism called proof of reserve, and they power it using a network called Chainlink. Historically, you just kind of had to trust the company issuing the wrapped token.
Yeah.
You had to trust that the Bitcoin was safely sitting in a wallet somewhere. But Circle is offering heavily regulated institutional-grade custody, and they use Chainlink's Oracle network to basically constantly audit the vault.
Oh, so Chainlink acts like an automated auditor.
Yes. Standing right at the vault door, it cryptographically verifies the exact Bitcoin balance and broadcasts it directly to the Ethereum blockchain in real time.
So it guarantees on-chain that every single SirBTC token is backed one-to-one.
Exactly. And as DeFi matures into serious financial infrastructure, that cryptographic proof is the exact level of compliance that Wall Street institutions demand.
It's incredible. We are basically seeing the tech world take its most valuable properties and rebuild them to work natively in next-generation environments. And it's not just finance, by the way. The Nintendo Direct announcements show the gaming industry doing the exact same thing.
Oh, I love this news. Nintendo announced that the legendary 1998 game Zelda, Ocarina of Time, is getting a full ground-up remake for the upcoming Switch 2 console.
Which is amazing. Rebuilding a game from 1998 for modern hardware is an incredibly complex technical feat. You can't just upscale the graphics and call it a day.
No, not at all. You're moving from a really rudimentary 3D engine to modern physics, ray-traced lighting, modern rendering all, while trying to perfectly preserve that nostalgic feel of how the character moves.
Right. It's the ultimate integration of legacy IP into a modern computational ecosystem.
They also revealed gameplay for Kingdom Hearts 4, which showed a massive multi-platform release. It's coming to Switch 2, PlayStation 5, Xbox, and PC simultaneously.
And that's because they are building it on Unreal Engine 5.
Right. Unreal Engine 5 acts as this ultimate bridge. In the past, developers had to build entirely different versions of a game for the isolated architecture of an Xbox versus a PlayStation versus a Nintendo.
It was so inefficient.
But Unreal Engine 5 provides a unified foundational layer. A developer builds the game once with photorealistic graphics, and the engine itself handles the crazy complex integration of rendering it across all those competing hardware ecosystems.
So whether it's Circle taking native Bitcoin and wrapping it to play in Ethereum's ecosystem, or game developers using Unreal Engine to make AAA titles work across walled gardens, or Apple taking Google's foundation model and weaving it right into iOS, the strategy is identical. You have to build bridges.
Yes. If we look at this entire stack of sources from June 10th, 2026, the biggest lesson here is that the future belongs to integrators.
Absolutely.
You don't have to invent the underlying technology anymore. You don't need to build the large language model yourself. You don't need to build the blockchain network. The companies and individuals who are going to win this next decade are the ones who are smart enough to just apply these tools.
Right.
To orchestrate them into their daily workflows, their apps, and their global communications.
You don't have to build the supercomputer. You just have to know how to connect it to your specific problem. But, you know, looking at all this AI seamlessly translating our calls in our own exact voices, silently writing our code, powering our phones behind the scenes, and quietly managing our digital money, it leaves me with this final thought for you to chew on.
Let's hear it.
If AI truly becomes this invisible infrastructure, will we eventually stop noticing its artificial intelligence at all? When the extraordinary magic just becomes the everyday plumbing, how does that fundamentally change our relationship with reality? Take that thought with you, and we'll see you next time.